So what do you think about this pivot to XZ? Are you down?
So I don't know. Did it, like, is it flawed from the beginning?
Right. Exactly. Okay. But so my entire thing about all this, though, is I've listened to every podcast. I've read as many of the debriefs as possible, the postmortems as possible.
Yep.
And one question no one has ever asked, and maybe it's just because I'm a cynical kind of guy, but everybody was saying, like, oh, well, how are we going to catch the new ones in the future? Oh, well, Alex Murray was talking about, well, debug symbols, you know, and there's you know, some certain situations where you're not able to get them. Like if you're doing handwritten assembly or something like that, you just can't have that avenue or whatever. But for the majority of the code that we see, at least in Ubuntu, you have the ability to do that, and you're able to use that as a stepping stone to identify weird malicious code like this, right?
Right.
That question is future looking. Nobody, and I guess it's nobody, the cynicism.
Back. Yeah.
Nobody looks back. Everybody talked about how lucky we were to catch this. How lucky open source and the Postgres guy just looking in the right place at the right time with the right goggles, you know, with the right attitude, with the right, it was so lucky. How many times has it happened and we didn't get lucky?
Yeah.
We have not been lucky yet. How long has that been in the kernel or in some other component of...
in the libraries that we depend on.
Coming up in this episode, themes are more global than you think. Caden Live does some layering. The history of LXDE to queue or not to queue. Then we call an audible. Welcome to Linux User Space. I'm Leo.
And I'm Dan. Leo.
Dan!
It's been a while.
A little bit. take a little break. Oops. But
we're back.
We're here. We made it. We're back. And hopefully it was worth the wait. I think so.
Yeah.
It's going to be. Because we got, I think we got surprises all throughout the entire show.
We sure do.
Turns out there's a lot of crazy stuff that happened while we decided to take a break.
And maybe that was a good thing we got caught up on some of those things, you know, during that little, you know, hiatus.
Yeah. Yeah, more than just life happened to create all of this. That the little bit of that had to do with Caden Live, but first, I want to talk a little bit about KDE and their global themes.
Yeah, this one's got some sting to it, I gotta say.
Yeah, right after I decide, oh, let's go all in on KDE Plasma 6, Plasma 5.28, and let's ride the lightning and go to, yeah.
And it was good. It still is good. But maybe this isn't good.
No, so late March, so a couple of weeks ago, Jensen Vars on Reddit decided to install a global theme named Gray Layout, created by Satoru Gojo. And Dan, did you know that global themes had your user access on the system?
No, that seems a little strange. I mean, I get that, you know, sometimes in packaging, things have access to a lot of your system. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But nope, didn't know that one.
Nope, because this global theme decided to go in and RMRF everything that was user touchable.
Yeah, that's less than good. And so, like,
that's
yeah. That, like, I started reading some of this article on Hackaday that you linked to me, and
Hackaday had the best write up. I think they
had a good
they
one.
Went into it the
I mean,
best.
Like, it started off with a Reddit post, right, which we'll link. But then it said, you know, it started behaving oddly and then prompted for a root password. That sounds bad. Why are your themes asking for a root password, right?
Yeah. The unfortunate part was that was the first tip-off,
yeah,
right?
Some of it was already too late by then, right?
Right. That was not great. So KDE comes back and says, warning on Mastodon. They say, mm-hmm. warning, global themes and widgets created by third-party developers for Plasma can and will run arbitrary code. You're encouraged to exercise extreme caution when using these products. A user has had a bad experience installing a global theme on Plasma and lost personal data. Global themes change the look of Plasma, but also the behavior. To do this, they run code, and this code can be faulty, as in the case mentioned above. The same goes for widgets and plasmoids. Though, so from the reading of the Mastodon post, it makes me think that I guess this wasn't malicious in intent.
Well,
it's as you say, it's the packaging kind of cleanup stuff, except I suppose the command that was used behind there was a little broader than we might have first thought.
It was literally remove, you know, recurse and force appended to the remove command.
Yeah.
And then it had a variable folder, which was config folder. I guess if that config folder happens to end up being defined as your home folder, poof, there it all goes. And I understand you want some of these things to be silent in the background, I guess, but some of the commands out there are really powerful, and pointed at the wrong direction, you're in big time trouble, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah. So you probably already heard the news. I mean, we're a little late on this one.
Well, but, fair.
You know, yeah. more than the conversation about that it happened, I really want to talk a little bit more about why was it allowed to happen in the first place. In my thought process here, I learn, well, you know, as I read the post and as I read everything else, I learned that global themes change the behavior, right? Of
yeah, absolutely they do. They,
Plasma.
They change your, you know, your panel layouts and your wallpapers and your colors, and there's a lot of stuff going on, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Do we want it to have that much power?
Well, we want it to theme.
Right. But, and I guess I'm just coming from, you know, the good old GTK metacity, throw a theme in the config folder and that's all it does. And there's really no executable code, arbitrary code or anything like that.
Right. Those things do a lot, but they don't do quite the same things, right?
Right. Exactly. And I guess that's it, right? Like that it changes the taskbar's look and abilities or...
Yeah, so it's changing that. It's probably changing, you know, adding the cube or, you know, the lamp, you know, shade thingy. Like all of those things are part of things in the background that is probably changing, you know, all of that other interaction with your desktop. Like I think those come along with a lot of those themes from what I know.
Yeah. I guess really the question that I want to ask is that worth the trade-off? Is having that amount of customizability worth the trade-off of nuking your entire file system if you accidentally,
well,
you know, type in the root password too after that? Because I can imagine there's a good chunk of folks that don't think about it.
Well,
anything pops up and they ticka-ticka-ticka their password in there and all of a sudden, poof, everything is gone.
So this brings something that... It brings a couple things to mind, right? A lot of people come to Linux because they want to be able to customize things and be able to, you know, rice their machine and make it look pretty and, you know, have that sort of interaction that you can't get on the other operating systems. So we're already interested in some of these things already.
But I take issue with that in the first place,
mm-hmm.
because if you yourself are ricing your system,
right,
then...
Well,
you are running the things or that you are resizing, you're changing, you're, right you're in doing there, what needs to be done.
Yeah, right in there in the config files yourself and changing them. I get that. But some people don't have the knowledge or you know, they're trying to, you know, get their way into that. And before they do that, they want to, you know, just be able to, hey, I'll just install this theme. That'll take care of that for me.
Oh, okay. I guess the answer to the question then is run it in a VM first. And if it deletes all your files, probably don't run it on your laptop too.
Or that brings me to my second point, Leo. You remember how when we were doing Arch and we were talking about the AUR and how you should inspect those build, you know, those package builds and stuff before you executed them?
Well, don't make good points.
I mean, you know, it's open source. The thing is out there someplace. You could probably, you might not know what's going on in there, but it's probably something you should inspect, I guess, before you run it.
So, I'll bite. But the AUR says it up front to do that.
And I think KDE should do the same.
Okay, I agree. They should. There should be a warning label on the tin. And
yeah,
if they do that, you'll placate me enough that I'll shut up about this.
Yeah.
But man, until then, I'm just gonna ring the bell of we shouldn't give global themes the ability to do that. Now, you've probably not heard me say the word widget or plasmoid, because those are essentially full programs.
They are.
Running and doing things on your desktop. Going into that, and this might just because of my own experience, right? I mean, I know that widgets are full code, and plasmoids are
definitely
running things in the background. But you can see it. They're doing stuff. It makes sense that they would have access to at least the stuff that you explicitly give it access to, right? But there's that, at least in my mind, there's that thought process in the back of, well, they're doing stuff. So, I mean, I should be careful with these. This is code here we're talking about. It just did not occur to me that global themes, aside from the artistic assets that come along with them, they come along with executable code too. Yeah. And I guess that's really my issue. I didn't know there was code in there.
Well, it makes sense to me when I think about it, because it's changing a lot of the other behaviors too, not just the colors and the wallpaper and stuff like that. It could be adding widgets and plasmoids in there. In order to do that, obviously, you know, you need to be able to do some of those things, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think short of you yourself inspecting some of these things, it needs to be something that happens, you know, it needs a peer review potentially or something like that. I mean, who has time for that, right?
There you go. That's where I was going with this. Like, after someone gets bit by something, of course they're going to go and probably, well, actually, I don't even know that they would, right? Like, they
probably
they'll go complain on Reddit. Did that guy immediately go and click the button of report spam, this nuked my machine? Or did he immediately go to Reddit and then KDE, someone from the KDE team, maybe Nate, was like, go click that button and then we'll investigate.
Right.
Right.
Like, I'm not sure. Yeah. No, I don't know.
I suppose all roads lead to fixing the situation.
Well, yeah.
And Nate on the Reddit post did say that they're going to look at ways to mitigate this from happening in the first place, which is fantastic. But I mean, man, warning label on the tin. When you click install on a theme or something like that,
it should pop up a little warning that says, hey, are you sure? I mean, this is going to change some stuff on your system.
Yeah, exactly. Some of it may be unrecoverable. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, it could also run code. Like, it could do real stuff on your machine. You know, FlatHub has this, you know, like.
Right. No, I really do think that's makes a lot of sense. And that would be, if I could find any fault here, that would probably be it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really where it's at. I mean, warning label on the tin at the very least. I think Elementary's model of being overly cautious is probably the play here.
Yeah. Maybe.
Because, you know, Elementary gets a lot of flack for the way that they word things is as far as like when you're right, because they have their internal FlatHub repository, and then they have, or I'm sorry, Flatpak repository,
right?
And then they have the FlatHub repository, and they're like, ooh, spooky software. But it is, though,
in a way,
right?
Sure, yeah, no, at least you've been warned. I mean, you can't refuse and say like, I have not been warned. I mean, you have,
right?
So yeah. I think that's if you're going to take a cautious approach, that would be the way. And it's probably not bad. It's probably not bad, especially for those people that just have no idea what's going on in the background and wouldn't know what they were looking at, even if they were looking at the code, right? I mean,
yeah.
Because they just want to use their machine and make it look pretty.
Yeah, and I just want the title bar to change a little bit, man. I'm still back in, you know, 2004 trying to change my GNOME 2 theme. I'm just like a different color.
Right.
That's all I want, man. I don't need anything special. Don't install plasmoids or widgets. I just want it to look cool. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do that.
Yeah. Please don't delete anything either. Yeah, no.
Oh God. Don't do that either, please. But it's good they're looking into it. I'm glad they're taking it at least seriously. And hopefully we get some nice, you know, in bowling, when you're bowling and you put the little bumpers in the gutter, like give me those at least. And I think we can kind of, you can click okay, remove the bumpers, let them do whatever they want. I get that. We could do that. That would be cool. So, another thing that bit me, was Caden Live. Okay.
No, listen. All right. Hold up before, just a minute. Like, I don't want it to make it sound like we're beating up on KDE here, but, you know.
It just happened this way, man.
It's not intentional. We really love it. I'm still using Plasma, so we're okay. We're friends.
Oh, yeah. No, none of this has scared me away. As a matter of fact, I'm double dipping. Hang on. Like, this is not.
There you go.
Let me just get into it. You'll see what I'm talking about. So I haven't uninstalled Plasma. We're still running that 100%. But Caden Live decided to bite me too. And I think a little bit of this is early adopter fever, because I saw 2402, the major release, and I'm jumping on that, man, because not only does it speed up the timeline and seeking and dealing with larger files and interface interaction faster.
Sounds good.
Now it takes full advantage of DirectX on Windows. So Caden Live on Windows gets a speed up, and it takes advantage of Metal on Mac OS on the M1 Apple Silicon whatever.
Yeah, those things. Yeah.
Yeah. So on every platform that Caden Live runs on, I don't know if y'all have been listening to this show for a very long time, but you will maybe remember that I love cross-platform stuff, stuff that runs on all of the systems, right? Because there are days I just don't know what system I'm going to be on.
Well, I'll say this, so too. I mean, if you've been watching us on YouTube and Tilvids, you've been watching a video that's likely been edited on Caden Live.
Not likely. Definitely.
So
100,000% all of it is from Caden Live. So, and I'm not switching anytime soon, even though this thing happened. So, okay. So I'm excited about the cross platform ability of Caden Live in the past. And then they went all in 2402. So I was like, well, got to get it now. Definitely installing this today. And then we recorded episode 15. And then I edited episode 15. And I get it edited, like ready to go. I need to add in a couple of banners and stuff to get it ready for YouTube. The audio version is already ready. Like that has already come out of Caden Live. So we're good. I'm waiting till the next day to do the rest of the video stuff. And I load it up and the timeline looks weird. I'm like, I didn't leave stuff like that. And I try to zoom in and I realize I'm like on hour 18.
We didn't record for that. Like, we go a long time, folks, but we do not go 18 hours worth.
Yeah, no. We get 2.5 hours usually. Like, that's the extent of our recording
session,
right? That would
be a lot,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's a big one. So I'll edit the show. It's usually down to about an hour and a half, maybe a little less, and then I'll put stuff that I've taken out of the show or want to use for later. I'll put that later on in the timeline, you know, around the 2-hour mark. I'll put a bunch of stuff out there, yeah. and then, you know, that may stretch out to the 3-hour mark or something like that.
Like shorts but a lot or of blank things like that that you're saving for something else.
Exactly. And so there's a lot of blank space in that, right? So it's not a full 3-hour, whatever. Anyway, so I'm sitting at this timeline and I'm looking at it and I'm at hour 18. It takes me a minute to process that, oh, that's not minutes, that's hours. What? So I'd scroll in and out. I you know, move the little, the marker and I play bits of it. And I'm like, this shouldn't be on hour 7. This was like 30 minutes into the show. And so it finally fully dawns on me that what happened was the show was like copy pasted over and 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 over again, all the way out to what I suspect may be Caden Live's maximum timeline length of like 24, like a full day, like 24 hours or something. It's 20 something hours.
That's a lot.
Yeah. And I'm like, this is not right. This is not good at all. Please tell me I haven't lost my edit. Well, folks, I lost the edit. it wasn't a good day. There wasn't anything I could think, you know, of course, hindsight's 20/20. I should have had another incremental copy. Saves yeah. up. Yeah, right. Like, okay, of course, sure. But, you know, in the moment, there was nothing that I could do to salvage that I knew of. Maybe there are cool tricks that maybe someone can swoop in and tell me, hey, it turns out you didn't have to spend that extra few hours redoing everything. You could have just gone back and done this. So, you know, if that's you, if you know Caden Live tricks and you could have helped me, let me know. Because like I said, I'm not dropping Caden Live.
Right.
We're going to try it again, but I was unhappy about that. And
understandable.
So, I have this habit of keeping the older versions around.
Mm-hmm.
So I installed 2312, whatever the 08, one previous 2308 to this maybe? Was.
Yeah, it came out.
Something like that.
November,
yeah.
probably. Yeah. October.
Yeah, and then just did a super quick edit. So actually, in episode 15, you'll notice that the astute people that listen to the audio and then go and watch the video, yeah, you don't exist, unicorn person. But if you do actually go do that, you'll realize that the video edit and the audio edit don't actually sync up this time, whereas every episode from ever does.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the same thing, right? Like the right. video and the audio are actually the same exact show with the same exact cuts. I just render the video later on because I add flavor to it. So I go back, do it in 2308, whatever the last version
whatever
was.
Whatever it was, yeah.
And I spit that out. But I refuse to close it. So I do, so I spit out the show, and then a couple days later, I'll do individual bits and then put those out by themselves, and then I'll go back and do a couple of shorts if I have time. But that whole entire time, I did not reboot. I did not, I didn't do anything
right.
to mess up the status quo. Because right. even though it was on a known working version, I was like, maybe it's my computer.
Well, you always like, question yourself. Not, I mean, I'm not yeah. above reproach, so yeah, I get you.
Yeah, and you know, there very well could be a hardware aspect to this. So
right.
I'm not even 1,000% positive this is a Caden Live issue. The stars just could have aligned. You know, is Mercury in retrograde? I don't know.
I don't know. We turned the sun off yesterday. So, I mean, you know, maybe.
Right? It was magnetism, dude. I don't even have any hard drives anymore, but it could have been.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Could have been. So, yeah. So, you know, it's a Caden Live problem, but I don't know if it's Caden Live's fault. So, you know, this is why I'm gung-ho. They added they've put out a bug fix release, 2402.1. It addresses a timeline issue
okay.
that eerily sounds like the issue that I ran into. Their focus was subtitles, but it was things not lining up after a save and after a reload.
Okay.
And I'm like, but that's my thing.
Yeah.
So,
well, maybe it's fixed.
I
then.
Think it very well could be. But again, like I said, you know, this has not scared me away from Caden Live at all. I'm just going to install the update and we're going to give this another go. I'm going to be smart about it and take incremental saves like I should have in the first place.
Fair enough.
And, you know, if something crazy happens, I should be able to go back and you know, not lose the entire edit.
Well, that would be good, yeah.
but, you know, if it does work out, then I also get to take advantage of all the really cool things that came out in 2402 as well. So
that would be nice.
And, and the portability, because what I was really actually planning on doing was editing it in Linux, like trying to render and export it on Windows, and then going and rendering and exporting it on some Apple hardware too.
Yeah, doing a little benchmarking.
And just kind of getting a feel.
Yeah.
Yeah, because now, oh yeah, so I didn't mention before, but Linux also got Vulkan support.
Right.
So everything used to be ported through OpenGL no matter what platform you were on, no matter what hardware you mm-hmm. or operating system you were using.
Right.
But now, Vulkan for Linux, DirectX for Windows, Metal for Apple, and so actually uses the platform-specific tooling to make things much, much faster. And so I was like, you know, I'm just going to pick. You know what? I'm just going to use open source software on whatever platform works the best, and we're just going to keep going that way with it. And if it's Linux, it's Linux. That's great.
Well, it'd be nice to do a comparison on it, right? I mean, just to see where it's at. That's fair.
But then it all kind of didn't happen the way I wanted it to. Yeah. So hopefully this episode, you know, lands when it's supposed to and everything. And I don't lose that. I'm going to be smarter about it, though. I'm gonna be smarter about it. Yeah, cross your fingers for me, everybody. Well, okay, I take that back. If you're hearing this, I'm just gonna hope that you crossed your fingers for me.
Yeah,
because apparently it got out. Everything happened.
Yeah, things happened.
Cool.
All right. Well, hopefully that works out, and hopefully continued success with KDE and Kden Live.
I'm not leaving either of them.
I'm not either.
I hope there's success to be had, because I'm not stuck. I want to be here.
You're going to have to do more than that to scare me off, I guess. So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I also don't install global themes, though. So
yeah, I generally don't do that either. If you enjoy our faces and enjoy Leo's Kden Live edits, you can watch them on YouTube. Or even if you just want to get all the history bits, you can catch that over at Tilvids. I mean,
we try to edutain you so well over there.
That's right. I mean, Tilvids is a great PeerTube instance, and we're so gracious for their support of our show, allowing us to post on their platform. And it's open source software, so that's pretty fantastic. And it's on the Fediverse, so I mean,
yep,
it's getting around all the places. So that's pretty nice. I really, it's been a great addition for us. And if you really, really love us, you could go on over to Patreon and give us a buck or two. And, you know, you get great perks and early access and high quality audios and all that stuff. I mean, we love
all
your support.
Kinds of stuff.
So we give you all the good juicy bits.
Absolutely. And Tilvids actually, not too long ago, they increased our storage mm-hmm. size. I think they're trying to tell us something.
Well, keep them coming. Yeah, keep them coming, I think, is what they're telling us. I'm pretty sure.
Well, we don't plan on stopping. So challenge accepted.
Yep, absolutely. So thank you for all your support everywhere, wherever you are.
However you do it, dollar or not. Thank you. When we take a look back through all the histories we've done so far and all the histories we've yet to do, what do we see? A wonderful amalgam of wheel reinvention and an excruciatingly long list of developers scratching an itch, whether that be professionally or just for fun. A beautiful world of fragmentation that brings us some of the best software ever written. If you've been following along, you already know that the desktops are no different. And to backtrack a little, we've covered CDE first, released in 1993, XFCE in 97, KDE in 98, and GNOME in 99. But another desktop worth mentioning started out a whole lot like XFCE, in that it didn't start out as a full desktop at all, but rather a single tool, the file manager. Simplicity was the aim here, using the bare minimum but not excluding features, at least the ones that would come in the future, only focusing on keeping things extremely lightweight. Every development decision had this thought at the heart of it. So in 2006, the first version of that file manager was released based on GTK2, PC Man FM, by none other than Hong Renyu, or PC man. The FM, of course, stands for File Manager, and did exactly what it sounds like. It was a competitor to, at the time, GNOME's Nautilus, KDE's Conqueror, and XFCE's Thunar. By 2007, LXDE, that's the lightweight X11 desktop environment, and it served as the umbrella name for all the singular, use them if you want, but you don't have to, components that were developed alongside PCMan FM. It had made its mark and started turning some heads. Lightweight distributions like PUD Linux, that's Penck's underbred distro, and B2D Linux, both lightweight-focused Taiwanese distributions, began taking notice, and discussions began in both about making a switch. By PC Man's own admission, 2008 is really when LXDE took off in popularity and started gaining more than just the basic features. PC Man FM gained a file search utility and features like single click to open in versions leading up to and including 0.5. LX Panel, the tray across the bottom, started coming into its own with version 0.3.7 this year, as did LX Session, essentially the launcher that sets things up. Things were really beginning to look up for LXDE. Debian saw the inclusion of LXDE in its repositories, and by extension, all the derivatives were able to take advantage as well. Lubuntu was in its infancy, and projects like Ubuntu Lite, later known as U-Lite, a distribution originally started in 2005 by Matic Ahacic, and then restarted by Shay Smittle in 2007, was one of the first in the majority English-speaking world that committed to using LXDE in May. Prior to this, PUD and B2D had already made the switch following their interest in the previous year. Others like Elemental Linux, Moon OS, and Watt OS followed suit. That wasn't it. Reviews in July backing up PC Man's assertion that LXDE was the lightweight desktop to use in spite of XFCE's established reputation in the field. In August, the blog was launched to parrot a lot of what was already happening on the mailing lists that were hosted on SourceForge at the time. Announcements were no longer buried, and information about the desktop that so many were clamoring to see was now much easier to get to. The first post made its appearance in September. After all this winning, PC Man disappears, at least for a little bit. It turns out the slowdowns people noticed weren't because PC Man was giving up. No, they were because he had a side job, becoming a doctor. Yeah, PC Man's side hustle is helping people after he's done helping people full time. Psydux, a Debian distribution with its own kernel with special sauce, gets an unofficial LXDE flavor with Compiz and 3DFX. But Debian itself, while the packages were there, wouldn't jump on the bandwagon for a while yet. That doesn't mean that other forward-looking and faster-moving distributions like Mandriva and Fedora won't take the bait. At the end of the year, Mandriva picked up LXDE. Their partners are adding it to netbooks. And Fedora too, with version 10. Even if PC Man was focusing his attention elsewhere, LXDE was still forging ahead, making steady progress on just about every component and even adding new ones like LX Session Edit, a startup application editor, LX Shortcut, an application shortcut editor, LX Music, my personal favorite, an XMMS-based music player that looks very reminiscent of FUBAR 2000. There was also time left in the year for a new LXDE translation project that's still ongoing in spirit today. By the end of 2008, LXDE was seen in TinyMe, a PC Linux OS derivative, Silats, a live CD distro, Greeny, an Ubuntu offshoot, Vector Linux Lite, Mia OS Box Edition, GOS, and Zenwalk. By 2009, it had become abundantly clear that PC Man would look to the community for guidance. And that guidance always ended up being stay lean, stay fast. And if the tone wasn't already set for that to happen, by the end of the year, it was solidified. This speed was showcased for the first time at FOSDEM in February. This year was perhaps the year that LXDE seized its place atop the lightweight mountain. Aside from Debian, there weren't many other places that it needed to land and prove its worth. One of the last few of those places was filled at a breakfast in Berlin. There, Lubuntu was truly born with the help of Mark Shuttleworth. LXDE didn't stop there either. It had been seen running on Android and on OpenSolaris too. Neither are traditional Linux. Speaking of traditional Linux, though, CentOS saw some movement in the full support direction, and PC Linux OS finished theirs with PCLXDE. At the end of August, the first Lubuntu test ISO was available, and Fedora 12 saw LXDE as the second most popular spin behind KDE. LXPanel saw major updates this year, and LXInput, a keyboard and mouse configuration tool, XKB, a keyboard switcher, and LXDM, a new display manager to replace usage of the GNOME and KDE's display manager, saw inclusion under the LXDE umbrella. Lots of other improvements across the entire family of apps, including an LX launcher rework. If 2008 was the year to adopt LXDE, 2009 was the year to show, not tell, people why they made the right choice. By 2010, there were only a few distribution holdouts, but OpenSUSE made the list one line shorter by joining with version 11.13, which added LXDE as a default option. Also in the year, PCMan FM would begin the process of a significant rewrite of the entire codebase to, you guessed it, refactor and speed things up even more than they already were. The answer to the question of, what do you do when you're the fastest file manager in all of FOSS? It's obvious. Rewrite. Make it faster. But this didn't mean that other parts of LXDE would slow down development. Nope. Just about every component saw some type of version increase, whether it be bug fixes in LX Music, a rewrite of LX Appearance, or entirely new applications like LX Pulkit for authentication. The team also made the display manager themeable because sometimes you need a little pretty alongside your blisteringly fast. Now, a feature you might have expected to be there wasn't until the end of the year. Movable desktop icons? Oh, and you can also now run LXDE on an Android phone, the Nexus One. 2011 saw more and more development across the entire family of apps, including more and more development on that PCMan FM rework. There was more development work to do in 2012. LXDE had another great year with becoming an official Debian desktop in the installer, not just having packages in the repos. And following that up, the PCMan FM rework, the official 1.0, landed in the later half of the year. It was 6 years in the making and was almost immediately followed up with bug fixes and minor releases. Was a full rewrite of PCMan FM enough? Absolutely not, because the file manager, and really all of the LXDE bits, were written apart from the UI code itself. Portability was baked in by default, as has always been the case. And with a chorus of when's GTK3 support coming, looming over the project because GTK2 was on its way out, PCMan decided another side project might be prudent at COS Cup 2012 in Taipei, Taiwan. Not a port to GTK3. Oh no, that'd be too easy. But to Qt. To those in the know, that's the same framework that KDE Plasma is built on top of. PCMan said,
"No, LXDE will not use Qt. Don't panic."
The most interesting and unique part of the PCMan FM Qt port are,
"No KDE dependency. Really, it's a lightweight pure Qt4 program. Almost as fast as the original GTK Plus version. I have not taken any time to do optimization yet. Uses libfm and glibgio and supports GVFS, so you can mount remote file systems. Source code is clean and short, written in C++. Desktop independent. do not depend on any specific desktop environment. Although it uses glib, GIO, GVFS, it does not require GNOME. Built with CMake, no more auto tools. Later, when the APIs become stable, I'll make it two parts, PCManFM main binary and libfmqt, which can be used in other PureQt programs.
The first real milestone was a working prototype debuted in February of 2013. A month later, PCManFMQt 0.1.0 was released to everyone. PCMan needed to be clear about the trajectory here. PCManFM and PCManFMQt would be two separate projects that would coexist, with the Qt port being labeled only an alternative. Not many people had waded into the GTK to Qt porting waters up until this point. PCMan saw this as a deficiency and wrote an entire guide for migrating from GTK Plus to Qt to help anybody that cared to look with getting up to speed. In the following months, with collaboration between the LXDE team and the Razer Qt team, an LXDE Qt preview appears, showcasing the LX panel, you know, the part of LXDE that you see all the time, aside from the file manager, the real backbone of the desktop. Speaking of Razer Qt, they were a competing desktop at the time with very similar goals. Run a very lightweight desktop on top of Qt. It was
tailored for users who value simplicity, speed, and an intuitive interface.
PCMan said of the project,
"So personally, I like Razer Qt very much and admire their work. Resource usage is a little more than ours, but that's understandable because it has more features. Free software is all about choice, but too many choices is not always good. Diversity is nice, but having duplicated work with the only differences in the GUI toolkits is nonsense. This only creates unnecessary divergence and waste precious manpower. Since we have the same goals, merging the effort is reasonable."
A couple of weeks after the preview of LXDE Qt was announced, the merger between LXDE Qt and Razer Qt was all but complete. Jerome LeClanche said at the time,
"We have decided that the best course of action for both projects is to focus on a single desktop environment instead of two. There have been talks of merging ever since LXDE Qt was announced. Having taken the decision to collaborate, we've all had the pleasure of working together already. Our plan is to cherry-pick the best parts of Razer and LXDE and include or port those to LXDE Qt. Other components will be ported straight from GTK code or rewritten from scratch. In the end, we want to offer the best possible experience while reusing as much code as possible."
But ever since the announcement, work and early releases of LXDE Qt, email after email, comment after comment, trickled in complaining of the dreaded bloat. Every lightweight project's nightmare. Between GTK lovers, Qt haters, and some that just jumped on the bandwagon because it was en vogue or they thought the entirety of KDE would be shipped alongside, it prompted PCMan to respond. No, LXDE Qt wasn't bloated. Far from it. PCMan demonstrated an LX terminal using the free command that the Qt version was running on a system using a slim 91 megabytes. The main GTK version took up only 86 megabytes. Aha! The naysayers might exclaim, "We found the bloat!" Until they realized that LX terminal hadn't been ported to Qt yet and required GTK libraries to be loaded behind the scenes to even get the thing to run. At every turn, over and over, bloat had been successfully dismantled as an argument. But it didn't stop many from saying it anyway. Throughout and further in the year, just as PCMan promised, LXDE, the GTK version, was loved and maintained as it always had been. And that LXDE maintenance continued into 2014, too, to include PCManFM 1.2.0. In late March, through an announcement to note that PC Man FM Cute was in a fine state, we see the first official talk of the project's name changing from LXDE Cute to simply LX Cute, in line with what we say today. Just a month later, the first full LX Cute Alpha is announced. And about 10 days after that, Jerome announced the first Cute lightweight desktop environment 0.7.0 is released by both LXDE and Razer Cute teams. This also marked a switch to a coordinated release type where LXQt, the umbrella project, is distributed along with the accompanying updated software like LX Appearance, LX Panel, and all the other bits that have changed. Oh, and a side note, PC Man FM Qt was Wayland ready. The announcement also noted,
existing LXDE users will be happy to hear that the GTK version of LXDE will not be discontinued for the time being. While several developers have shifted their focus on LXQt, a classic LXDE will continue being maintained as long as there are developers still working on it.
Astute listeners will note the words, for the time being, tucked neatly in that little bit. It was one of the first public mentions of a deadline for LXDE itself. A couple days later, initial free BSD support for LXQt showed up too. Now, for those keeping count, in mid-2014, on bare systems with OpenBox in the backend, LXDE ran at 78 megabytes of RAM, and LXQt ran at 95 megabytes. PC Man noted the need for optimization. For reference, XFCE was clocking in at 89 megabytes. By June, LXQt got full QT5 support. With the year winding down and an LXQt 0.8 released too, PC Man notes that LXDE is still not dead and won't be as long as GTK2 support is still kicking. Andrei Gritsenko, however, would be leading the charge since the bulk of the project's resources would be squarely pointed toward LXQt, but both projects are still, most certainly, actively developed. To mark the end of the year, we say goodbye to Razer Qt, a 2-year project that shone brightly and was ultimately absorbed by LXQt. PC Man said of the shuttering,
without the work of the Razer Qt project, we couldn't have LXQt now. Its developers deserve credit. Long live free software.
The seismic shifts were over. Starting with one project, then two, then a third, and Razer Qt were back down to two for the foreseeable future. Things would move a little slower and a little quieter. In 2015, the 0.9 release was caught on snags in Qt 5.4, but eventually released in early February with a new theme and polish. Also, by this point, LXQt could be found wherever distros existed, really. Adoption took almost no time at all compared to its earlier sibling, LXDE. LXQt 0.10 followed in November with lots of backend work to speed things up and lots of translations. With LXQt 0.11 releasing in the new year, all the way in September, so too were renewed grumblings of bloat. So, here are the stats. Running only a file manager and terminal to get the stats, LXDE, 100 megabytes of RAM. LXQt, 120 megabytes. XFCE, 150 megabytes. It also shipped with better multi-monitor support and a search feature in the launcher. 2017 saw another late-in-the-year release in September. LXQt 0.12 came with a new save dialog in PC Man FM Qt, better high DPI support, and tons of Qt optimization. In 2018, we saw the release of LXQt 0.13. This also marked the split from the LXDE project in more than name. A GitHub project was set up for the purpose of tracking bugs and general development where PC Man, Jerome, and a few others gathered to continue to work on the software. In 2019, LXQt 0.14 is released and brought with it split view in PC Man FM, some basic desktop icons like the home directory, trash, and the computer, and tons of translations. In 2020, LXQt 0.15 released with better file extension handling, better keyboard navigation, and better tooltips. With this release, the cadence of April and November releases begins. Two big jumps per year. And 0.16 followed with power management improvements, new themes, and better tab handling in PCMan FM. At the end of 2020, GTK2 would have its final release and would start moving toward the end-of-life preparations. Apps based on the toolkit would need to move to GTK3 or even 4, as it had just been released end of year as well. This sounded the death knell for LXDE, since GTK2, if it hadn't already been removed from distributions, would be starting soon. Debian, at the time, set the death date of GTK2 at August 14th, 2021. If there were any chance at survival, a port of LXDE was necessary. And GTK3 would end up being the target because, as it turns out, Arch developers, among others, had been tinkering with the port since 2016. These packages have been maintained and are still installable today. 2021 was a big year for LXQt. First, with another minor release to 0.17, which brought in creation time information for PCMan FM, better panel auto hiding, and power management options. But in November, it was time to celebrate. LXQt 1.0.0 was released, upgrading to the long-term support release of QT5, version 5.15, was the big undertaking here. This would allow the team to target one version of Qt until the next big jump becomes necessary. Aside from this, image viewer improvements, a do not disturb mode, a custom command option in the panel, more themes, and tons of translations are just some of the improvements for this momentous release. This year also marked the last year that LXDE components were publicly noted. Any future development would be done piecemeal with new developers. LXQt is full steam ahead. There were two releases in 2022. LXQt 1.1 in April, which brought in dbus support so that apps like Firefox and Chromium could access PCMan FM without trickery, among other improvements. But also the work to begin porting to QT6. There's still much to do, but this should cement the idea that while LXQt is a traditional and conservative desktop, they're still modern in most of the ways that truly count. With LXQt 1.2 in November, PCMan FM gets a search history, some old icon issues were cleared, and a ton more Wayland work. While the last official releases noted on the LXDE blog were 2 years ago now in 2023, there are certainly still LXDE diehards keeping things alive. Since the port to GTK3 was done, you can still find LXDE being shipped in places like Arch, Fedora, Debian, and OpenSUSE. And in fact, the last official releases happened here. Though if you poke around in the GitHub, you can see that development, however small, is still ongoing. April and November also have their normal releases again this year, with LXQt 1.3.0 bringing in smooth scrolling, system tray improvements, and Wayland fixes. And LXQt 1.4 landed with PCMan FM remembering the state of the last session, better color representation in the image viewer, and fixes for various apps like Telegram, which use dbus in the backend. 1.4 is also the last planned release on the 1 branch. The 2 series is done and ready and is planned to release in the usual April slot with almost full Wayland support, but will certainly be based on QT6. The target for Wayland will be LXQt 2.1, which should, if the stars align, be released in November 2024. But speaking of Wayland, at this point, the desktop, runner, notifications, panels, logout, and most apps are already compatible. A few things like the taskbar, global shortcuts, and screen grab apps still need some time to bake. Sadly, as we record this, 2.0 isn't actually out yet. And by the time things are all edited and released, LXQt 2.0 will release and immediately make this history obsolete.
Of course.
But isn't that how they all go?
So you can catch all the great topics as they unfold on our Lemmy subreddit news channel on Discord. You know, linuxuserspace.show/, you know, the thing. And that'll be how you find it. So, yeah, we've got Lemmy, Reddit, Discord, Mastodon, Telegram, Matrix, Twitch, Twitter, or X, or whatever we're calling it this week. We've got all those things. And you can find us there and interact and certainly catch the news and send us your feedback and, you know, all that stuff. We'll take it.
If you're listening to this part right now, send in the emails right now.
Yeah, Leo loves
another
emails.
Topic show coming up. I know, it's my favorite thing. We're coming up to another topic show, which, you know, that's where we do the feedback. So
yeah,
if you've been thinking about tip-a-tapping a comment or an email or anything, get it done soon and it'll probably land in the next episode. So
yeah, absolutely. I know we've already got some things that we've collected that we're definitely going to have to discuss. Mostly about last episode, but that's okay because that's, you know, feedback. That's what it's all about. And we did a whole show last time that was all feedback. You know, your show. We did it for you. All right. Moment of truth.
Yeah, we've been dealing with this stuff for a little while, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because supposedly we've been running an LX asterisk.
So I won't say that I didn't do LXDE at all, because I've done some.
Yeah, LXDE is old. It's over. Nobody uses that anymore. Why would you install it ever at all?
And so I've definitely used it. I know what it is. It's not really changed that much, so I'm comfortable with that. And
You just didn't do LX anything at all, and you just did a whole plasma month.
No. I've done plenty of LXQ. But I, before we get too far down the road, I definitely want to say my introduction to, well, I guess it wasn't my introduction, but the place that I really sought out that super lightweight desktop was this little guy right here. And this,
what is this?
This is a Chromebook. It is the first Chromebook ever made. This is the CR48. This is
the Acer one?
No. This was never released. This was only like pre-release things for certain people testing out Chrome OS.
But you've been holding out on me. What is this now?
It's a CR48 is the technical the model number of it. I think it's a lot of Samsung parts, maybe. I'm not sure. It's unbranded. It's unbranded. It's a Chromebook. That's it. And so very pre-release 2010 timeframe, I ran Chrome OS on it for a while, right? And got sick of that because that's too limiting. And so then in about 2017-ish, maybe, I don't know, 2016, somewhere around there, I figured out how to hack it and get the BIOS flashed. And so it's got a different BIOS on it. And then obviously now it's got a dead battery because there's no battery here anymore.
I was going to ask missing.
That's the battery. The battery that's gone.
But you could still run that with like directly powered, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's really basic. It's got, you know, a USB, a card reader and an audio port. And
so still perfect for LXQt today.
VGA over there. Well, it runs LXQt, it can, but I started, where I'm going with this is I started with LXDE before Ubuntu made the switch to LXQt. And so that was kind of my introduction to the project, and I wanted to help contribute to an open source project. And so that's where I began my journey. I needed a lightweight distribution, so I picked Ubuntu, and it was a good choice.
This is the part of the show where you tell us that you're unabashedly biased.
I am.
Toward LXDE/LXQt.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
There you go.
Now you know.
Everybody.
Now you know. I've been a contributor to Ubuntu since that time. And
so anything he says, grain of salt.
And I really helped, I jumped in and helped out with, some of that transition stuff, getting LXQt off the ground for Ubuntu. I helped with some of the first announcements and the testing and all of that stuff. And that began my journey there into contributing to open source stuff. So you wanted some, we've been asked about our history and how we got here. Well, that's a pretty good portion of it. And
there you go, Vizamp. Yep. You're welcome.
Yep. And there you go. And so that lets you know how long I've been messing around with both of those desktops.
More backstory. So what year was it? Did you say, or did I just miss it?
Yeah, 2017. About like, so we were getting ready to do the big transition in 2018. So like the tail end of 2017, I started messing around with that. And then in 2018, there was an LTS that they kept LXDE on the LTS, and then
much like Plasma's doing right now in 2404,
yep.
Right? Yep. Kind of missed the cutoff.
And there was a lot of bugs in those early releases, and I've got to think that the Lubuntu users were certainly contributing to the bug reports that helped fix a lot of that stuff.
I thought you were going to say contributing to the bugs, and I'm like, yeah, probably.
Well, no, maybe. I don't know. But no, I don't think so.
They're not that far upstream.
I think a lot of that utilization is what brought about, you know, good, valuable bug reports to get things fixed. And in those first few releases, it was buggy. No joke. But then by the time that first LTS came around in 2004, I think it was much more stable. So big improvement there. Obviously it's continued on since.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool. So, I don't know if anybody noted it, but, do note any problems you've had with Lubuntu, since approximately 2017, 2018 are a direct result of Dan's involvement with Lubuntu. So direct any problems you have with Lubuntu, both to the Lubuntu bug reporting system, but also to contact at linuxuserspace.show, just so we can have fun.
Don't put that evil on me.
I'm gonna do it. I already did it. It's too late. I edit the show.
I know. No, it's really improved. It's been great. I'm just one of the guys. I'm not leading anything necessarily. I'm just,
yeah.
Just, it takes a lot more than what I do. Let me put it that way.
Okay.
Much more. Much more.
We can't directly blame Dan.
Okay. No.
It's fine.
Anyway.
I'll do it anyway, so, though.
I didn't run it for a month. I've been running it for 6-ish years.
Okay, so for the next 3.5 hours, Dan's going to tell us his experience with LXDE and then the transition to LXQt.
So it was like that transition thing wasn't smooth. There wasn't just a script that you could run, and like, I guess you could, but like, you had to rip out pretty much everything and start over again to get that.
That's a whole new framework.
It totally was. Yep. All the components, everything different. Yep. Start over. That's what we did. And so that was what we advised when people, I mean, because they really did break our update cycle, if you will, because that's one of the founding things for Ubuntu is you update from release to release. And while you could, it wasn't clean. It kept a lot of, like, the updates, normal updates, kept your old components of LXDE, and it installed the new components of LXQt. And, yeah, it switched to them, but you still had both. It was a little weird, and you could remove it, but settings were wonky and whatnot. So that transition wasn't good. What we advised at that point was, yes, please back up all your stuff and start over.
Reinstall. Yeah. It's just the safest way to do it. And it solves so many, like, it pre-solves so many bugs that would absolutely crop up when you're, I mean, you're literally pulling the rug out and then inserting a whole new rug.
Yep.
And yet somehow the little cup didn't fall over, but it's like wonky now. And then someone's going to write in about that, and you'll be like, just pick the cup up, then change the thing, and then put the cup back down. That's That's the answer.
Well, and here's the other thing that happened in Ubuntu land at the same time, which is not really directly related, but after 1810, 1904 alpha stuff was happening, like before, you know, we got too far in the 1904 release cycle, Ubuntu decided to drop 32-bit ISOs, right? And so that was when 32-bit went away.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
And so being the lightest, the lightest desktop available, we got a lot of hate mail, as you can imagine, because
you have both.
Yeah, we were, you know, the lightest, and so like that was the desktop how that you wanted to install.
How dare you use 240 megabytes on my disk? How dare you?
Yeah, and so XFCE got a little too, because we were the last two flavors to drop 32-bit support.
Well, I mean, you're conservative desktops in the first place.
Right.
So,
right,
you know,
right.
You take any change conservatively. Mm-hmm. It's a slow moving process.
Right.
And yeah. So I guess someone that is looking for the ultimate lightweight. And in the history, we talk about this a lot, where PC Man, has to come out three separate times.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were even more, but I have in the history three separate times where he comes out and says, it's not even bloated though.
It's light. It's still light, guys. Yeah, no, he said that.
I think this is where my biggest issue with people that scream bloat all the time comes from, where it's like, bloat is very subjective.
For sure.
It's very subjective. And you're never going to hit that target, whatever that target is supposed to be for all the people that are saying bloat, but they mean different things. It's impossible. It's an impossible situation to be in.
So the really cool thing is it's a very modular desktop, right? As you mentioned and talked about, all of the components can be used independently for the most part. And, you know, it can sit on top of any window manager, really. I think. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I've yet to find things that it didn't work well with. Sometimes.
Well, Sway loves it now, right? Yep. Because it's been Wayland. PC Man FM has been Wayland ready for a very long time.
So.
And Sway has taken advantage of that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, even in established desktop environments, you can bring PC Man FM in and just run it on top of whatever. So it's versatile.
Yeah, so if you get into the window manager stuff, like, and you're really into the tiling window managers, you can incorporate that right into LXQt and turn that on and do all the tiling and still have a desktop. And it's, you know, so you can use the mouse or you can use the tiling stuff. I mean, it's very versatile and it's a great modular thing. And
I think it was around 2016 maybe that PC Man FM really kind of embraced the keyboard navigation ability. You know, people doing that. I think you realize that people are using it as a file manager for window managers.
Right.
And you realize if that's a big use case for
you can
the file manager, then you gotta embrace that, right?
Yeah, well, you can totally flip that around and use the desktop on any window manager. So the term that gets thrown around is window manager agnostic. You can pair it up with any window manager that you want, and that's kind of cool. I mean, not too many other desktops can say they can do that, right?
Yeah, I love that because of the definition of agnostic, where it's like PC Man FM is just like, you know, I'm not actually sure if the desktop actually exists. I'm just not positive.
Yep. And so
that's my favorite. I
think you will be hard pressed to find a full on desktop environment that is lighter. I really do.
No, I don't think you can do it. I don't think you can do it. You saw in the very last in the history, PC Man talking about in the first two, LXQt was slightly heavier than XFCE, but in the very last one, and I think that continues today, where LXQt. Maybe a little heavier than LXDE, but it's certainly not heavier than XFCE. So it's really
close neck and neck, I think, even still, because there have been a ton of optimizations. I've noticed some, you know, utilization going down, actually, in the last couple of releases. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, 300 or 400 megabytes of RAM is not out of the question for what you would typically see consumed, just kind of sitting idle or having the file manager open. And that there aren't too many others that come close to that, unless they're just a window manager, really.
Right, exactly, where it's meant to be full-on stripped down and right. You kind of piecemeal it together. Yeah, I mean, if it were a race between XFCE and LXQt, my money would, a lightweight race, right?
Yeah.
My money would be on LXQt every single time. Yep. Every single time. I might lose that race once or twice, but I think overall, I'm going to win.
Yeah, I think you're right. And don't get me wrong, I think XFCE is also pretty great as far as resource utilization. But the switch to GTK3 was the big thing that made them balloon just a little bit.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, it kind of hurt everybody.
More features. So, I mean, I get that it's going to increase, right? Nothing goes down, really, for the most part. So
number only go up.
Right. Yeah.
That's the way it goes. Well, my experience was a little bit off the beaten path. I think my experience was closer to your experience in 2017 than your experience in 2024.
Mm-hmm.
Because I took the challenge literally. Whereas in the history, LXDE doesn't really die, but
it doesn't.
I think the majority of the people that took the spirit of LXDE personally moved on to the LXQt project, right? And so the real spirit lives on there. But we said in a couple episodes ago that we were going to be doing the history of LXDE. And as soon as I started looking around, I realized LXDE wasn't actually dead.
It's still there. Yep.
Very much so. Okay, so I'm a Ventoy guy, so mm-hmm. I threw Fedora 39 with LXDE on Ventoy, and it would not install. I double-clicked on the icon that should have been an installer. It was a .desktop file, which I suppose they all are. It just did not occur to me that it was that until now, because I double-clicked it, and it said, what do you want to do with this desktop launcher file? And I'm like,
execute?
Yeah. But it gave me the execute in shell and ignore or, you know, a couple other options. And so I was like, yeah, just like
make it go.
Yeah, go. Is there a button to just say, stop asking me questions, just do the thing?
Right.
But there was not. And so I chose execute and it spun for a little bit and then nothing. And then I was like, okay, well, maybe if I execute it in the shell, or in a terminal, maybe it'll tell me what's wrong. Also nothing, like literally nothing came up on this, nothing happened. So I was like, all right, we're doing this the hard way. So I get into the terminal, I navigate to the desktop, I apparently have to add the execute bit to the file. It wasn't there prior. Maybe there's special sauce in live CDs that you don't need that. I don't know. But I added the execute bit, I ran the file, and then it gave me all kinds of weird, it looked like language pack issues. And then at the bottom, it spoke to me in Dutch. And I was like,
all right, I'm out.
Okay. You know, I don't actually know that it was Dutch. I don't read many other languages than English, really. Like, you know, I can read 1.5 languages.
That's fair. That's about where I'm at. Yeah.
And that whatever it spit out at me was not it. And so I was like, you know what? Maybe we'll try the beta. Maybe they fixed it. Well, I tried Fedora 40 beta with LXDE, and it ended up with the same issues. I was like, all right, you know what? Tried and true, Endeavor OS then. And it worked. So Endeavor OS in LXDE, which means Arch, one of the big groups that took over LXDE development, it still exists, and you can still install it, and it still 100% works. Exactly as you would expect it to, on top of GTK3. Everything has been ported over to GTK3. So as long as GTK3, we said this before with GTK2, right? As long as GTK3 exists, so will LXDE.
Yeah. And I'm sure there will be a day someday when that doesn't happen. But until then, here we are.
Well, you can really tell with LXDE that I think 1080p screens at that size, at 14 inches, was not common.
Mm-hmm.
Because every single one of the themes that is applied, it doesn't matter what you choose. You could choose any of them,
right.
All of the themes. They're all so small.
Right.
In the title bar is where I'm like, I wish I could scale to 150. That would help a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
But LXD doesn't do scaling, not that I could find.
Yeah, so LXQt does. It's been a thing that they've been improving on all along.
Yep.
And it is getting better.
Thank you, Qt.
Yep. No, yep. It's getting better. Yeah, they're definitely utilizing those Qt libraries. As you know, as we've experienced with KDE Plasma, it's been one of the best desktops for scaling. And so they're using some of those frameworks that are underneath to be able to make that happen.
Yep. Yep. So that was my first impression was, man, that close button's small.
It's tiny.
And it really is. I mean, it really, really is. On a full 1080p screen at 27 inches or something, I'm sure it's fine.
Right.
But, man, it felt like I had to be super accurate.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And you know, the button drawn, like usually when you draw a button or whatever, you kind of have, there's an area outside the button where it's still clickable. Not here.
Yeah.
Nope. You better be accurate, my man.
And so, can you imagine this guy with the touch panel, 14-inch, 1080p screen, trying to touch on those things? Because that's
absolutely
hard enough.
Absolutely not.
That's hard enough when they're bigger. Trust me.
Yeah. No. Absolutely not. At you know 1280 by 800 or something, it feels right.
Right.
But at 1080p on 14 inches, whoo.
Yeah.
Accuracy is paramount.
Yep.
But, you know, everything else works the way you expect it to. I had the same issue with LXDE that I have with XFCE,
mm-hmm.
and it's with power management monitor stuff.
Mm.
I don't know if it's just Arch or if it's just LXDE in general, but there's no power management.
No, and I think a lot of the time, like what we had in Lubuntu before we switched to LXQt and had power management.
I didn't know this. Okay.
We used the XFCE power management tools.
I installed it. It's XFCE 4-power-management in Arch. It didn't work. That's why the laptop is closed today to showcase the stickers.
Well, they look pretty.
I worked hard on that. There was a lot of forethought in that. But I set it to just never on everything, and it decides it doesn't. You know what? Yeah, Bruno said it, man. XFCE strikes again. If I have to add XFCE, or if I'm just using XFCE, it just doesn't agree with me. It's mm-hmm. like when you eat that, Pepper X or a Trinidad Scorpion Pepper or a Ghost Pepper or whatever, the revenge of the Ghost Pepper. It comes. Always. It's always
sweaty.
For me.
Feeling sweaty.
Yeah. Oh, I was kind of sweating it because I was doing this 30 minutes before the show, and I was like, oh, I'm going to have this.
Yeah,
I'm going to
get it.
It's going to be great. Yep, and then I was like, wait a minute. There's no option to do. Okay. And then the Arch forums came to the rescue, and somebody installed the XFCE stuff, and they had a fine time with it. And I was like, great. It'll work for me. But XFCE never works for me. So
that is one of the things that I think has been improved because there is power management stuff now, and it's probably not perfect yet, but it's vastly improved because it actually exists, so that's been good. And you mentioned like LXD living on, and I feel like some of that reasoning for that is Raspbian, which we did test, and it is very LXDE based, but I almost feel like that's a fork at this point because they've diverged and gone on and done their own window management stuff on top of that, which kind of breaks the tradition of having open box or something like that, right? And they did a lot of that.
Yeah, we got to go back.
Yeah.
Because they went Pixel. They did their own desktop environment with Pixel.
They did.
But it was still based off of LXDE,
It is. It's got some of the same. It still has PCMAN FM, the GTK version, and some of the LXDE things in there. So I feel like that's a hard fork at this point almost. And so they've kind of gone on and done their own thing. And they added a lot of that stuff to get Wayland in there rather than kind of tinker on. I think that's the, because now you know when you do Raspbian it is Wayland by default, and maybe that's the reasoning. I don't know, But you don't see a lot of those improvements pushed back upstream into LXDE. So that still kind of exists on its own.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, LXDE, I think in 2024 is kind of the same way that it was in the, with the last official update, which was in 2021. So yeah, not much has changed. Some maintenance.
Probably translations. A lot of translations improved and whatnot. Yeah.
Yep. You can still use it. Discord still works. Telegram works.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
all
everything
the
works. Like, it's still a fully functional desktop. It's on GTK 3, so it's modern
ish
enough.
Yeah.
And yeah, right. So, I mean, it's certainly still usable. But I think, as I mentioned at the top of where I started rambling about this, LXQt is kind of where the spirit is.
Absolutely.
That's where the developers that were developing LXDE have moved on to.
If they moved on.
So, yeah. 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 Well, I mean, as far if GitHub is to be trusted as far as the list of developers.
Well, I think so,
you know,
yes.
PC Man's still there. Jerome is still there from the RazorQt project. Right. Simon Quigley's still there, who's still very involved. You know, there's a whole lot.
Yeah.
Of the original folk.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
That were around back then are still on, at least technically their photo is on the GitHub, the GitHub project. I did not go and look at individual commits, so I can't say for certain, but it does look like it's the old gang. So they're all there in the LXQt project.
Yep. Yeah, and there's some new people that have been gradually getting on board, of course.
Absolutely.
And so that's
cannot forget the new contributors.
And so that's where a lot of there's just a lot more activity there, and you're seeing a lot of improvement. And obviously, like we pointed out, Qt 6, it's happening. It's going to happen. Wayland, that's going to happen too. It's just going to be a little further, not too much further, but a little bit. And a lot of Wayland support has already happened. So good
2.1 get ready. 2.0 is coming,
so this fall be ready for it,
Dan. I'm telling you, watch, it's gonna happen again. It happened with mm-hmm. Mate.
Mm-hmm.
If we drop this episode the day before we drop this episode or the single or whatever it is,
I
guarantee you,
it'll looking at the watch
that's
it'll
when
be, it'll be close
yep, so yeah, we'll be 2.0 is almost out, and then the day before we drop it, LXQt's like, guess what? 2.0's out. You're wrong.
Yeah. It could happen. I mean, you could go grab that now if you wanted to grab the stuff out of the AUR or compile it yourself and go nuts. You could do that. Yeah, but it'll be here soon.
They'll do it to us. I guarantee it.
It will not be in 2404. Just going to point that out. I mean,
it's too late.
It'll be a little too close. That's already frozen up. So
you know what? If your world is only Ubuntu, you know what? Listen to us. We've got the answers.
Right. I got you covered. You can catch all the great links at linuxuserspace.show. And here's a really important thing. You want to email Leo because he loves email. So
do it.
You can email him. contact@linuxuserspace.show. Send us your feedback. We'll get it on the show. You can also go to linuxuserspace.show/contact, and that'll let you do an anonymous-ish form. You can put your email in there if you want. But
yeah, you can put junk in there if you want to. But yeah. I'm a little backed up right now because I need to respond to some. Like, we've already done it on the show, and I haven't said any. Oops, I'm sorry. To you, I am sorry.
But
I'll get there.
It's coming. Yeah. Next show.
With a timestamp, though, because, you know, I think pretty much everybody that's emailed in with anything more substantive than show's good, we've responded. So
we try.
I'll get you a timestamp, too, to where we actually responded to your stuff. Yeah, sorry about that. But we will respond. That's the
important it'll be in the
thing.
Show.
Regardless of if it's on the show or not, you will absolutely 100% get a response. That's cool.
So Leo loves email. I read it too. You can send them there. You can send them anywhere you want. I mean, we'll take all your feedback.
Comments wherever on the Lemmy. Go put it in we have a user space on the Lemmy. You can go air out your grievances out there. I don't know that we can help with that, but we can at least updo you. I don't. What is Lemmy call it?
I like, don't know.
Uplemming you.
Yeah, it's. I guess it's still upvoting.
Up arrow. I'll give you an up arrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not the down arrow. The up arrow. So that brings us to next time. And next time, this is exciting. This is
Audible.
Exciting. We're doing an Audible. But before we do that, we're doing topics next time. And
oh, right. That's right. Sorry. Yeah, I'm getting ahead of myself.
But the thing that's going to happen after that topic show, there's where the Audible comes in. So we've been doing all these desktop environments and kind of testing those out, giving you the history of all of those things. We're going to take a little pause on that. So
happened.
Something big happened, and we don't normally cover news stuff, but we wanted to dive into the history here of something big
that
happened.
The timing between episodes is too long. Like, we can't do news. It has to be at least weekly to be able to hit that kind of stuff. So we don't do that kind of thing.
But
so
I think we have an opportunity to cover something that hasn't been covered so far. I really do. So
yeah. Okay, so I think we've mentioned it before that after LXQ or LXDE, we were probably going to do Cinnamon, but the thing that happened, what happened was there was this XZ thing that exploded all of the internet, and everybody in open source was like, see? But then everybody in closed source was also like, see? But that belies the whole situation. There's more to it than that.
There is.
So we'll have some hot takes for you. If you subscribe,
we're gonna dive into that for sure. Yeah.
We don't normally do the advertisement part here, but you know, if you do the $5 or more thing, me and Dan have like a whole thing in the pre-show about the XE where we kind of basically cover all of it. But the XE thing happened, and instead of doing Cinnamon, which is where my bias will probably show, I kind of want to do the history of XZ.
Yeah, right from the beginning. And it goes way back, folks. So none of that, I think, has really been covered very much other than from where the hubbub started. I mean, that's been covered.
Yep.
So we're going to go further.
There's a question that we ask that I don't think anybody has asked.
Nope.
Put your tinfoil hats on, babies, because
it's coming.
I'm getting real cynical in the next one, because it's maybe I'm just
we're gonna make the old brain bucket work a little overtime for you. I hope.
We haven't seen something this crazy in open source in a long time. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, of course, we're going to jump on the bandwagon and do that whole thing. But we're going to do the thing that we always do with everything. And that's look back and see all the stuff, all the weird little noodlings that happened that led us up to this point. And then, of course, we'll cover what actually happened down with XZ and, you know, who was involved and all of that kind of fun stuff. But then we get real cynical.
We do. Yeah, but I mean, you know, it'll be good.
It's going to be fun. I think it's going to be really cool. It's going to be a really cool history episode. I apologize because Cinnamon won't come out in season 4 because we already got episode 20 figured out. That's Gen 2.
I know.
Gen 2.
It's like so hard to believe that we're getting so close.
I know. It's over. Like the season, we've planned it out. It's over.
It's over. Go home. What?
Are you guys okay with this?
I don't know.
I don't know if I'm okay with this.
Well, I mean,
I wouldn't mind the break, but I don't know if I'm okay with it.
I guess it lines up next season, doesn't it?
I guess. We'll start with the desktop. Maybe we got to figure out, what do you want to hear? That's another good question.
That's probably the most important question.
What kind of history things do you want to hear about? What kind of things can I dig into? Because XZ is different. XZ is not anything like anything that we've ever dug into before, but it's something that I want to dig into.
I think we got some good hot takes, and I think it'll relate to a lot of people, and people want to know what's the origin story on this. So that's what we're going to get to. Yep.
Yep. Someone's going to say Unix, and then someone's going to say BSD, and I'm going to be like, well, wait for episode 20.
Yep.
Of season 5.
So
that's a long one. Those are big ones.
So stay tuned. Tell us some stuff. You know, you can go Reddit, Twitter, Mastodon, Telegram, Matrix, Discord, whatever. You can go hit all those things and send us stuff And however you do it, you know, join the conversation in there with us. And we got all the links in the show notes and stuff on linuxuserspace.show. That's where you can go.
Click them.
And so
click those ones, join those things, you know, all hang out with us.
History stuff we did earlier. We'll have some links in the show notes so you can go check out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Just in case you wanted to check me on these dates.
Well,
I brought the receipts, my man. I brought them.
Yep. So where can we find you, Leo?
You can always find me over at mastodon.social. Okay. I actually don't cross post.
I don't either.
Twitter.
Nope. I don't
anymore.
I think, really don't post on Twitter. Maybe a retweet. Is that what we're calling it still?
Yeah. That's pretty much the extent, right? Like if someone says something to me on Twitter, I still have an account.
Yep.
So I'll respond to you on Twitter, but mm-hmm. I don't. There's nothing on Twitter that's not on Mastodon,
right.
And there is stuff on Mastodon that is definitely not on Twitter. So, Mastodon's the home.
That's kind of it. Yeah.
Yeah. You can still follow me on at Leo Chavez over on the Twitters, because there's still some mirroring going on. Mm-hmm. So you can still stay up to date.
And I'm at KC2BEZ on both places, Mastodon.social and Twitter. And you can catch at Linux User Space. On both of them as well. And, you know,
I was going to say it.
Yeah.
But you said it.
I know.
Thank you.
I know. Well, I tried to remember. And so that's all over the place, too. So you can always hit us up there. Anyway, that's going to do it for the show. Please come back in 2 weeks or so for more Linux User Space.
That's it.
Bye.
See you then. Bye.
One of the things that Giatan was working on was the test suite. You know, adding the tests in to verify.
This was that F-Sync thing.
To verify things are working correctly, right? And
yeah.
That's some of the
that's
stuff.
That's the beauty of this
so that's
particular
some of the
attack.
Stuff that,
I love it.
That like, we're depending on to make sure that the code is good.
Yeah. But he turned it off. He used a known broken
right.
version prior that we had. So the developers had moved to a working or a better working version of it because it would catch the use cases that he was trying to use.
Right. So that's my point. Like, we're depending on those test suites to verify that the software is working correctly, but the same people wrote the test suite. So how are you going to know if it's working
yep.
the way it's intended?
Yep. Exactly.
You aren't so going to know.
Nope. The more cynical you get, the worse it feels.
It does. And, it's got a bad feel to it. And so then what's the answer? Go to proprietary code that you can't audit and inspect?
Oh, absolutely not. We're in a better
right.
position than a Microsoft would be.
Yeah.
Because it would never be found. It would never be found. There's no money to be made in going back and looking unless something explodes in your face. Then
right.
you'll lose money if you don't. But you're not losing money if you do for no reason. I mean, you are losing money if you just do it for no reason.
So,
or you're paying a team.
Could a state-sponsored person get, you know, inside of Microsoft? Question mark?